Hello there.
Welcome back to another episode of Star Wars in the Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Eli.
I'm Jacob.
This is episode 122 of Star Wars in the Galaxy. We are going through, of course, season 16, Obi-Wan Kenobi, the show by Deborah Chow and Joey Harold and Hannah Friedman and Andrew Stanton and all the great writers there. We're covering part three. You may notice that we do not have Scotty J-Ro on with us. Unfortunately, prior circumstances have disabled him from being here with us. We wish him the best as he goes through a particularly difficult time with his life. And we'll look forward to having him on here as soon as he's ready. It's just going to be Jacob and I. Our guest plans for the fourth episode of Kenobi fell through, unfortunately. It is not going to be a full guest season, but we are doing the guests for a majority of the seasons for part one. Obviously, we did part two. And then part five and six, we are going to have guests on. So, not as many guests as we hoped, but we still got a lot of them, and we're grateful for those who were able to make it. And for those who couldn't, we absolutely understand and look forward to having them on in the future.
Yeah, so this is this is an episode that I never thought until this came out that we would ever see anything like...
I fucking know, right?
This was pretty out there.
I'll do the summary for this one.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. In Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 3, they get off the... We start with the Dark Lord of the Sith. We start with Darth Vader. Yeah, so it's on Mustafar, where Vader has his suit assembled. He's informed by Reva that Obi-Wan's alive. Vader then tempts her and promises her with the position of Grand Inquisitor should she capture Kenobi. We then see Obi-Wan and Leia on the shuttle, on that cargo shuttle. They go to grassy mining planet of Southern California. Sorry, Mapusa. I've been waiting so long to make that joke. Quick sidebar. Jacob and I are both Southern California residents originally. And so we know what that shit looks like on Tython and Mapuzo.
I'm like, not fooling anyone if you're from around here. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's just funny to me. It's not like a plot hole or doesn't ruin anything for me. It's just like, okay, yeah, they've filmed this in Southern California.
Yeah, I didn't mean to sound like I'm trying to dump or say that it should look more different. I'm just like,
yeah. Okay. Anyway, so they land on Mapuzo. Obi-Wan sees someone in the distance that looks like Anakin. And then he looks back and realizes it was just a vision he had through the Force. Then Reva goes to Fortress Inquisitorius for its first live-action appearance on Nur. Probe droids are sent out, and the fifth brother and fourth sister reluctantly join her in her hunt for Kenobi. Obi-Wan and Leia get to the rendezvous point that Hajik sent them, but found no one there. But they did find a truck of an Imperial ally, a trucker named Freck, who offers to take them to where they need to go. They pick up some stormtroopers along the way. Tensions are huge because Leia and Obi-Wan obviously cannot have anybody know who they actually are. Get to the Imperial checkpoint. Obi-Wan does some blasting, gets some stormtroopers, and then as soon as stormtroopers surround him, they are taken out by an Imperial officer behind them who reveals herself as Tala Dureth, who is part of a resistance movement that we'll find out more about later in the episode. Darth Vader and the Inquisitors and the Empire come down hard on Mapuzo. As soon as probe droid stands, Obi-Wan realizes that's where they are. Tala takes Leia and Obi-Wan to a safe house for what is known as the Hidden Path. The Hidden Path will be very important in not only season 16 of Star Wars in the Galaxy, but season 18 of Star Wars in the Galaxy as well. It is a organization to help hide and ferry out young Force-sensitive individuals, and Force-sensitive individuals of all ages, from being hunted by the Empire. It is one of the first resistance movements against the Empire, and they have a bunch of safe houses, including one on Mapuzo, all leading back to their main base on the planet Jabim. Leia and Obi-Wan are about to go through to get to the rendezvous point with the pilot that Tala set up, but Obi-Wan sees, Obi-Wan senses Vader's presence and goes to confront his old master, making Tala swear that she will get Leia to the rendezvous point. Darth Vader comes into the village and slaughters countless civilians just to get Obi-Wan to come out. They do eventually duel in some, like, abandoned fields on Mapuzo. Not much is around there. Obi-Wan is badly beaten in this fight. And one of the first things that Vader does, once he beats him, is pour some coals nearby on the ground and light them on fire. And then drag Obi-Wan through that fire. In a stunning imitation of what Obi-Wan did to him on Mustafar so many years ago. Allah gets him out of there because Leia told her that she should help Obi-Wan and that she can get herself to the rendezvous point. She gets to the rendezvous point at the end of the tunnel, but Reva, having found a way through the path tunnels, is on the other side, having killed the pilot that was supposed to greet Leia, and capturing her, taking her into the possession of the Galactic Empire. And that's where we end part three. What an episode. What an episode. Wow. Yeah, where do you want to start with this episode? I feel like there's an obvious place to start in this episode, but maybe that's just me.
I don't know. I think obviously this kind of coming away from it, all you're thinking about is Darth Vader, Obi-Wan and Darth Vader. And
the Vader episode. This is
there's
the
a
Vader
lot that episode. The episode ends with Vader, but it also starts with Vader.
It starts with Vader, yeah. It starts with Darth Vader.
Another one of those meditation scenes where Obi-Wan is now confronting the reality of Vader. And I think this opening scene is amazing. It's super hard, and I love that hush. And then just one moment of Vader breathing. I love that kind of the symbolic power of Vader's breath and the way that you know, iconic, infamous sound used in this episode convey meaning.
Can I begin this episode with an incredibly hot take?
Go for it.
I think this is the best Vader that we've seen in the last 40 years. I think not since Return of the Jedi has Vader been this good. Not saying that Vader's not a good character or they haven't used him well in Disney era, but this is just so incredible to me. I love the Vader scene in Rogue One. No, I love Vader's appearances in Fallen Order and Survivor. Not even close for me. Like, this Vader is the myth, the legend. Like, this is, for me, one of the best ways of showing, like, this is one of the greatest balances for me between showing why Darth Vader is so feared and also not turning it into a dude bro power fantasy, because at the end of the day, he still is the fucking bad guy.
I think what makes this episode interesting is that everything is told from a certain, this is told from Obi-Wan's perspective. Almost, I would say. And I think it fully is. And we simultaneously have Vader at his most terrifying, his most merciless. He hardly even says anything in this episode. The entire first scene is just Obi-Wan. Not the first real Vader scene, which we'll get to more later. It's just Obi-Wan transfixed in horror watching him. And simultaneously, it's Obi-Wan, arguably at his weakest,
yeah,
his most vulnerable, his most scared. This is the most vulnerable, scared, and desperate version of Obi-Wan that we've ever seen. And I think it's really cool how they bring those into contrast. And it's almost as though Vader is this way in this episode because Obi-Wan is this way in this episode. And I really like how we get this version of Vader, especially for Obi-Wan to experience.
Absolutely.
As he's catching up with what the reality, he's catching up with the reality of what he's unleashed on the galaxy for the past 10 years. Not saying it's entirely his fault, but emotionally for him and for Anakin slash Vader.
It feels like it.
It feels like Obi-Wan has created Vader. So this is everything crashing down at once, and it's pretty explosive.
It is for me. I'm going to gush about this episode. Again, this episode is, again, probably not even my favorite episode of the show, but it is, for me, like, Deborah Chow and Joby Harold and Stuart Beatty and Hossein Amidi and all those people who worked on this, they fucking deserve all of the accolades, all of them, for me, because the way, like, I cannot tell you how many audible, I let out. Of those I let out when I heard the breathing, I saw the lightsaber. Like, it was almost involuntary. This, more than anything I can think of recently, and believe me, Jedi Survivor has a lovely Vader scene. Or lovely isn't the way I should describe it. It has a brutal Vader scene. So does Fallen Order, so does Rogue One. But Obi-Wan Kenobi was the most recent thing to make me realize why I love this character. And it is because, and we'll get to this, Star Wars is always pulled from other storytelling. George Lucas was obsessed with the monomyth, with Joseph Campbell, with all the stories that had preceded Star Wars that he was pulling from. And Obi-Wan Kenobi does a very similar thing here, where it pulls from some folklore and some stories that George Lucas hadn't pulled a lot from in Star Wars, but still are very influential, which is gothic horror. Vader is the Frankenstein's monster. He is the Dracula. Going through the city, mowing down those people. Again, I'll get to this later. But this is why people fear him. He will do things out of spite. Just to do him. He is mythologized in that way as the monster. And so it makes it more believable when we're told of how scary he is. Like, already, I'm not saying that the Inquisitors don't command their own fear of their own. Reva, Grandi, Fifth, even Fourth. But you can tell, when Vader takes control of the situation, you can tell the shit just got real.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this episode is the manifestation, the complete manifestation of Vader as, like you said, not just as the character, not really Vader the character. We're not even really getting Vader the character in this episode. We're getting Vader the semi-mythical figure. This is, like, imagine from the perspective of the townspeople.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh my, holy fucking shit. Like, for this rumor that you may have heard of once or twice, you're like, no way, this guy, he can move things with his mind. This doesn't say anything. He's dressed in black. This crazy robot guy, and he killed something with a thought. And then all of a sudden, he's here. He's more terrifying than you even thought possible. And there's no reasoning with him.
And he's just burning going a village.
And killing everybody.
And he's burning a village. He's slaughtering an innocent village for one person. That's it. Yeah. It's for one person. He killed relatives. He killed family members, friends that day because of one person. And it is... Yeah, let's back up for a second because
we can circle back.
Yeah, we'll circle back.
There's a lot that we need to. There's a lot we can talk about.
Yeah, I will say just also with Vader because this is all throughout the episode. So you know whose voice that is, right?
I do not. It's not James Earl Jones, I believe, in this one.
James Earl Jones, technically, but not really.
Is it AI?
Yes, it is.
Jeez.
It is AI. And I gotta say, look, they got James Earl Jones' permission for this. He was a consultant on this. He's in his 90s. James Earl Jones is in his 90s. I think after 40 years of voicing Darth Vader in Star Wars, I think he's earned, like, a break if he wants it.
Yo, yeah, absolutely. That's no...
And I'm...
Up to him.
Yeah. I'm not saying that I... would unilaterally approve of this in all circumstances. Because I don't. This is one of the rare exceptions where I feel okay about the AI. In art. This is like, I feel like they did a really good job of incorporating it.
Yeah, I would have preferred, honestly, AI just... the inclusion of AI in movies and TV in these ways and deep fakes and you know, whether it's voice, visual, what have you, it really makes me uncomfortable. I would much rather that. My biggest issue is that Disney seems allergic to recasting.
And I sometimes, understand.
And I'd much rather they just find someone else to voice Darth Vader. But that being said, I think the product, the end result was totally fine to me. I didn't really have a problem with it, so
yeah,
I guess it's all right.
I agree with you. I think they should be more open to recasting. I think, of course, AI in entertainment can become an extremely, in art, it can become an extremely slippery slope. And in, I'd say, probably 95% of cases, I'm probably against it. But there are those rare ones where like, there's a... I was texting with a good friend of the show, Alden Diaz from Octo Radio, and he specifically pointed out to me the line, one delivery that he loved from Vader. It's the, "Now you will suffer, Obi-Wan." That's just so bone-chilling. And, you know, it is, because it's still James Earl Jones' voice. It's not like, this was before the ChatGPT stuff really took off. It is not basing this stuff out off of nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's taking James Earl Jones' voice. They're feeding it tons of James Earl Jones recordings. Like they did for Luke in the Book of Boba Fett. And The Mandalorian. This is not like it. Like they're taking from actual James Earl Jones material and replicating it. Again, I don't want to sound like I'm caping for AI too much because I really don't want to. But I think its use here was actually pretty good, actually. I'm not going to lie to you. And this is, again, I want to be very careful. This is not an endorsement of AI art. It really isn't, because I think in, again, in 95-96% of scenarios, it bad. I'm on the record on Twitter and other places saying that. I do believe myself that AI art specifically only created by AI, is not art. Because I believe it needs that human element. But AI assisting to make art, it depends on the circumstances, but I am not unilaterally opposed to that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm neither here nor there on it. I think I have my opinions, but for this, yeah. I think it's only as relevant as we or they choose to make it.
Yeah.
So... everything that happens on Mapuzo before Vader, Obi-Wan has this little vision of Anakin, which I really like. I think it's super eerie and chilling. And the small detail of Leia just clutching up to him and moving behind him just that little bit, even though she doesn't know what's going on, just making you wonder. She is force sensitive. Maybe she senses something is up. I don't know. I just thought that jumped out to me as a cool little detail. I don't know if you picked up on that, but I interpreted that as something interesting possibly.
Yeah, no, I think that there's that line later where Leia asks Obi-Wan if she's his real father. And Obi-Wan said, "I wish I could say that I was." And I think Obi-Wan becoming a parental figure of sorts to Leia in this series. I know that originally, I think this is some behind the scenes stuff. Originally, there was some concerns that this plot with Obi-Wan and Leia was going to be too similar to The Mandalorian. Grizzled warrior and young child with special powers gallivanting across the galaxy. And I understand that. I understand, and I understand people who still see that. I do. But I will say that, first of all, Obi-Wan is really only a temporary parental role for basically these five episodes. And that Leia is, of course, an incredible character, but in this, she's also a really useful thematic device for Obi-Wan to remember what he's fighting for. By seeing her hope, by seeing her optimism, you know, they're like, she's always hopeful that somebody's coming at the rendezvous points. he's the one who's like, no one's coming, Leia. And it's such a harsh, I don't know if you noticed that, like, how harsh that was. That was such a harsh delivery. That, like, no one's coming, Leia. Like, it almost seems
oh, yeah.
like
very intentional.
Calling
very
her
intentional
stupid that. For even thinking that somebody is coming. Because that's how jaded and how deluded and how cynical he's gotten about the state of the galaxy.
Yeah, this is the kind of his... This episode is the nadir for him, really, of his kind of his trajectory in this. And we absolutely do see that there. I think that, you know, through all of his interactions, especially on Mapuza with the truck, everything, that it just, it's very emblematic, obviously, of where Obi-Wan is at. And a lot of these moments are pretty jarring. You're like, wait a minute, is this really the Obi-Wan that I like? This is a different guy than the one that we left, because...
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Obi-Wan in the Clone Wars, he wouldn't have been this harsh with Leia, and neither would Obi-Wan in A New Hope. Neither would he have been like this either, I think. And it's a fun...
I would say neither twin sons.
Yeah, sure. And then the truck scene.
First, I have a couple things before we get on the truck.
Okay.
Actually, just two. Number one, I want to get to this. This is actually while they're still on the transport going, which, again, shout out to Alden Diaz. I know he loves this exchange, and I do too, and I wanted to bring it up. How does it work, the Force? What does it feel like?
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever been afraid of the dark? How does it feel when you turn on the light? I fucking love that as an explanation for the Force. Everybody sees the Force differently. That's something that I love that the High Republic established, is Jedi seeing, like, Avar Chris saw the Force as a song. Keeve Trennis saw the Force as a tapestry. Elzar Mann, I believe, saw it as an ocean. Like, all these different ways of... I think there was another Jedi who experienced it as, like a weird spider web sort of thing. All these people have these different and equally valid interpretations of what the Force is. And I love that, and this is to quote actually Star Wars Rebels, this is the end of season 2. Ahsoka says to Ezra, I believe it is, sometimes when you think you understand the Force, you realize how much you don't understand it. You realize how much there is that you don't know. And genuinely want, it's the Obi-Wan, it's an energy field that binds us, penetrates us, it surrounds us, it penetrates us, it binds the galaxy together. In A New Hope, I want that to be the clearest explanation of what the Force is. I don't want anything, like, clearer than that. I want it to be that ambiguous. And I like it because it's a very, because the Force, of course, is an extremely personal thing in Star Wars.
Yeah.
And and I really like that it's, I like when Star Wars gets vague like that for lack of a better word.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah.
I also just want to point out before we get on the truck, one more line delivery that is fucking great. It's Reva in Fortress Inquisitori when she's bossing around fourth and fifth, where she goes, the Moses Ingram's delivery. Moses Ingram, again, does not, in my opinion, get enough credit for the series. Fucking knockout. It's send out the probes. Do it now. That, like, the way she phrased that, she is seething so hard. This is a very...
This is what she's waited for.
Right? I think I'm going to name this episode... This is the first time I feel like in a long time I've named an episode while in an episode. This is the Cope and Seethe episode of Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's what all these characters are doing. They're coping and seething.
Yeah.
The only one who's not... main character who's not really doing it as much as Leia, but... But even still, she misses being home and all that kind of stuff. But Obi-Wan, it's a lot of cope and seethe for him. Vader, it's a lot of cope and seethe.
I think he's hyperventilating.
Yeah. Obi-Wan is a lot of copious.
Obi-Wan's freaking out, man.
Yeah. Obi-Wan is a lot of copium. Obi-Wan's on a lot of copium this episode. Vader's on a lot of copium this episode. And Reva's on a lot of copium this episode. All three of them are just like, they're just so fucking angry.
Yeah.
Which, because of different reasons, it's those reasons that make it so complex. But yeah. Want to get to the truck?
Yeah.
Before we get to anything, you know who Freck's voiced by, right?
I don't know.
Jacob, would you be surprised if I told you that Freck is voiced by Zach Braff?
Would you be surprised if I told you that that name isn't ringing a bell at this particular moment?
Yeah, he's a famous actor. He was on Scrubs. He was... he just did this weird short little role in Obi-Wan Kenobi, just randomly.
To Star Wars to fit in a cameo in every possible corner, a little... Maybe not.
It's ridiculous. You know. It's ridiculous how Zach Braff just appears. Here.
And this person's here. Yeah.
But you want to talk about Freck? Yeah.
I beg your pardon?
But you want to talk about Freck?
I don't know what to say about Freck, to be honest. I don't know. I like his species. He's cool. He seems neat at first. And then, of course, he's a loyalist. He's a real loyalist. And that kind of comes back to bite our heroes in the butt a little bit. But they just fumble their way. They fumble their way through this. And I really like when we get a little bit emotional, a little bit misty-eyed with Obi-Wan, Leia, and saying, oh, it's been a difficult time for us. I get confused sometimes. Leia was her mother's name. She reminds me of her so much. Because, of course, he's totally spinning a tall tale, but he's also speaking from the heart.
It's a double meaning. You
know? Leia figures out, this is what you've been hiding from me. You knew my mother. And that's very important to her as well. What do you want to go back to?
I want to go back to Freck for a little bit, and I'm going to go on a bit of a political rant.
Okay.
Please, no one, and tell me, like, I'm tired of seeing this, that Andor was the first overtly political Star Wars, first of all.
You can't compare this to Andor. This is one moment. Andor is an entire show. I disagree strongly, but I'm sorry. But do your thing.
I'm not saying that this show is as overtly political as Andor. I'm saying that this show is a lot more overtly political than people give it credit for. Freck is one of the biggest components of fascism. I'd say Freck is very similar, actually, in this way to Tim, actually. Freck is not a hyper fanaticist. He's just a regular guy trying to go about his business. He likes the Empire because they bring order, and that's really it. He is as opposed to somebody like Cyril Carr, those hyper loyalists like Hemlock or somebody like that, who radically believes in the Empire. You also need somebody who is just looking out for their own self-interest and will enforce the ideas of a fascist regime.
Yeah.
Because that's what they know. It is a... They need the regular people. Freck, I believe, is probably a decent person, but he supports fascism. And the line's gotta be drawn somewhere.
Yeah, I think this is an example of no one's immune to propaganda. And if being a good person, if good people never supported bad systems, there would probably be no bad systems.
Yep.
Which is to say, this is an example of how not even good people, I should say, but just most people are good, but most people are also susceptible to propaganda and to the kind of cynical quid pro quo that they're kind of forced into, which is, hey, you might have to be a collaborator, and will take away your rights and freedoms, but you'll also maybe feel some security and stability depending on who you are and what your position is. And that's where we find Freck. That's where we find Freck.
And like, I want to extrapolate a little further on this, because we have these stormtroopers, which I also think is a really interesting scene, because Obi-Wan's going to be mowing down these people for the rest of the series. But the stormtrooper chatter reminds us that they're still humans. They're not humans, but they're still people too.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Yeah, but you already got to, sometimes when I look at Luma, I see her mother's face, which, God. Damn. I can't with that.
It's cool how they work that moment in the midst of everything. And that's kind of what this show, kind of how this show unfolds ultimately, is it feels like everyone is being squeezed so tight. Like Obi-Wan is being squeezed so tightly by the Empire, by the Inquisitors, by Vader. And it's interesting to see how that pressure changes or sparks some development, realization, personal, interpersonal developments. It's cool. It's cool. I like it. And then we meet Tala after the roadblock. What do you think of Tala as a character? You don't really get to know her that much in this episode.
Yeah.
That comes a little bit more later,
Part 4 is really more about her, and part 5 to an extent. Tala is really interesting to me because she is so incredibly on top of everything. Like, she's not invincible or perfect in any way, but because she worked for the Empire, she seems to know their systems backwards and forwards, and thus can find really good ways of exploiting them.
Yeah, she worked for them, yeah.
And...
Sorry, go ahead.
Like, there's... I'm like, we'll get to this in part 4. She... Like, usually you see people try to impersonate Imperial officers, and they don't do very well at it, and they have to do some extra convincing. Tala doesn't need any extra convincing. She does it flawlessly.
Yeah. Because
she's been there. Because she has been there. And she was like, immediately after they got to the safe house, she was like, to her pilots, she was like, yeah, get the ship ready. And they're like, we don't have any time. And she was like, did I sound like I fucking care? Get the ship ready. And I think that... And again, looping back to Obi-Wan's journey in the story, seeing that there are these people who can realize, yeah, I was wrong. Yeah, I did some messed up things. We'll find out what Tala did that made her turn her back on the Empire in next episode. But just seeing that Obi-Wan can know that there are people willing and able to fight back.
Yeah. Tala is really the show, especially with that conversation right before we get Vader introduced, where Obi-Wan's kind of asking, how would you stick your neck? Like, what are you, like, how are you doing this? Why are you taking such a huge risk? Isn't this insane? And you're thinking to yourself, gosh, Obi-Wan, isn't this what you did for a living all those years ago? Is this really so hard to believe that 10 years ago, you were trying to do the same thing?
In Obi-Wan's defense, I will just say it was different then, but I completely understand.
Yeah, no, sure. I'm just like,
yeah.
I think it's cool how the show likes to show Obi-Wan what he's missing in a sense, or where he needs to go. And it's interesting how, I guess, a tall example of how in these first few episodes, especially this one, puts a lot of work with, whether it's things that Leia just so happens to say, whether it's Tala, Obi-Wan showing him the way.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Showing us this is what he's seeing that's reawakening the drive of the Jedi within.
Yeah, and there's that part later where he's talking to Tala and he goes, where Tala says to him, I made some mistakes. And Obi-Wan responds, we all did. And she said, I didn't know Obi-Wan Kenobi had it in him to make a mistake. I can't imagine Obi-Wan Kenobi doing anything wrong. And that, for me, that conversation for me is one of the hearts of the show. Because her Obi-Wan Kenobi didn't do anything wrong. Like, again, he's a human. He obviously makes mistakes. But it's about the stories. It's about the myths.
Yeah.
And Tala and Leia and Haja and all the other people he meets on this journey believe in the myth of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And it is only through them is he once again inspired to buy into the myth of Obi-Wan Kenobi again. Now we see.
I wouldn't even call it a myth. For him, I wouldn't even call it a myth. Just he has to rediscover his belief in. He has to rediscover believing in himself and believing in the power of people to pick themselves back up after they've gone through a period that they're not proud of. Or he just has to realize that he's not defined by the Darth Vader incident.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Let's go into the safe house with my guy, Ned B.
Oh, yeah. Ned B, the nonverbal loader droid.
Yeah, which, again...
We don't see him in action just quite yet, but...
We will. Ned B inspires one of my other favorite lines from this episode. He's just a loader. They don't allow him to communicate. But what if he has something to say?
Leia's that voice of...
Only Leia.
I don't know how to characterize it in this show. I don't know quite what the word is. She's the purest voice, maybe.
I do.
What would you say?
Truly wonderful the mind of a child is. Truly wonderful. And, I love that. That does sound like something a six-year-old like Leia would say, who is as empathic and as thoughtful as Leia would say. God, I love it. So let's get to one of the biggest concepts in this episode. Some call it the path. We have what many have called an underground railroad for Force users to escape the injustices and tyranny and persecution from the Empire.
That's what they're calling it?
I've heard people call it that, yeah.
Okay.
And it is this, and to me, this is such an ingenious idea because it opens up so many possibilities, because we can always go to other people helped by the path.
Yeah.
Like this.
And we get a, sorry, go ahead.
We can always go to other people. People were pointing out on the wall, there are names on there, Jyn Altis and Rom Koda from Legends, some new names on there. And then there's one, I think, that Jacob, you were about to mention.
Quinlan Vos.
Disney.
He's alive and kicking. He's out there.
I don't care what the fuck you think you're doing, Disney. I need post 66 Quinlan Vos stories yesterday. Fucking yesterday. I don't know why they haven't gotten on this. It's that and Obi-Wan's brother that just seem like begging for extended stories about them.
I would agree about Quinlan. Yeah, I think that would be very nice to get a Quinlan story. That's someone who, if you're really entrenched in reading the comics, the lore, you might know a lot about Quinlan. You might really like Quinlan, but if you're not really into that stuff, you might not really know who he is. He's in the Clone Wars once or twice. He would be a cool character to bring to the forefront a little bit more. He would be cool. I wouldn't mind that. Is it time to come back to the elephant in the room?
Not quite. I just want to do one more thing, which is I love that motto that the path has. Only when the eyes are closed can you truly see. Which I think is also a great, again, lesson that Obi-Wan learns in this season. To block out all the noise that in his head about like what he did and what he allowed to happen and all that kind of stuff. And focus on the internal, on who he is and what he stands for. only when the eyes are closed, when you're blocking out all that nonsense, can you truly see? Can you truly act? In a way.
Yeah. Using the power of the present.
Yes.
Obi-Wan learns to become present again.
Yeah. And not by looking. Learning to become present, he learns to become himself again.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
Dun, da-dun, dun, da-dun.
I just gotta say, Vader's reveal and entrance, I don't really know what other word to use than masterful. It's masterfully done.
Passing the shadow by the building.
Yeah. I love seeing Obi-Wan. I don't love seeing, but exciting and compelling seeing Obi-Wan like this, because we so rarely see him like this, where he's hyperventilating. He's brimming with emotion, transfixed with horror. The horror beyond words of looking at Darth Vader for the first time and everything that means for him, and him thinking, oh my God, I created, this was Anakin. And then just him just unable to look away, even. Yeah. And Tala has to tear him away from the, as Vader just tears through the town and kills people.
It is
indiscriminately. I think you may be right. This might be one of the most compelling Vaders of the.
And I think they keep it up, by the way, in 5 and 6, actually. But, in parts 5 and 6, but it is this tangible fear. One of the other things about this episode that I think is incredibly true with both of our main villains in this episode, Vader and Reva, this episode for me is fundamentally about the motto, the phrase, I'm sure you've heard it, but it is really true for me about this episode. Hurt people, hurt people.
Well, Vader's pretty darn hurt in that case.
Yeah.
He is pretty darn
No,
hurt
absolutely. But he is
doing a lot of hurting.
Yeah, no. And both Vader and Reva's arcs in this episode, I think, can be nicely explained by that phrase. Because they have all of this rage. They have all of this trauma in them. And they're taking it out on the people who are in their vicinity. Again, like we said in the beginning of the episode, Vader massacres a village for one person. Who, by the way, he doesn't even get to at the end anyway. Because his own, because Tala stops him from.
He doesn't even try, though. He doesn't even try. He just wants to play the game, it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think that's a bit, like, I think Vader in this episode is a bit like the dog catching the car, in a sense, where
yeah,
he's been salivating, whether he realizes it or not, what he'd do when he got to Obi-Wan. But yeah, in some ways, that's more interesting to him than actually getting Obi-Wan.
Or maybe maybe on some level, he's also afraid of what will happen. He actually catches Obi-Wan, and what will it actually mean for him if he actually has to then torture and kill Obi-Wan, which is seems like that's what he's planning to do. So yeah, that is a good point as well that you make, Eli. I think Obi-Wan here is especially compelling. I can't imagine how terrified Obi-Wan must be when he runs down to the coal plant to lead Vader away from Leia. This is Obi-Wan at his most fragile, his most scared, his most desperate, as I said earlier. He doesn't even meet Vader's challenger first. No, Vader steps out in the open, ignites his lightsaber,
and
Obi-Wan just runs away. He's not even running fast. This is a hobbled, desperate man. He's just trying to do something, anything, to avoid confronting who he feels he has created.
It almost feels like in this episode that Vader isn't fighting Obi-Wan. That Vader is instead fighting the shell of the man that Obi-Wan has become.
He does say age has made you
weak. The years have made you weak. And to give him credit, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
He is not wrong. But only because Obi-Wan let himself do that. And then we have, of course, one of the most infamous exchanges in this series that, of course, I'm going to bring up. What have you become? I am what you made me.
That pretty much sums up how they both feel. I think and both their characters, Anakin, of course, being the one to some extent, maybe deservedly, and to some extent, very illegitimately, placing the responsibility for his downfall onto Obi-Wan. It was Obi-Wan's fault. And then, of course, yeah. Obi-Wan did what he did to him.
Yeah.
Maybe some of it, Obi-Wan's fault, more or less. A lot of it, not really Obi-Wan's fault in a greater in the grander scheme of things. Obi-Wan taking full responsibility to some extent. Yeah, you were Anakin's master, and you really fucked up a lot of times. On the other hand, no. Like, honestly, no, it's not entirely your fault either. Yeah. So it's very emblematic of those characters, too, that they both want to shift all blame and responsibility for everything that's happened onto Obi-Wan's shoulders.
Yeah. And I think it's because that Obi-Wan and Vader, for separate reasons, don't want to face the fact that, again, I don't think Obi-Wan's blameless, of course. I think that there were ways that he failed Anakin. But Anakin made this choice.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you have to understand. If you want, look, was the deck stacked against him? Absolutely. But no matter how much you want to blame Mace Windu or Obi-Wan Kenobi or Yoda or even Palpatine, Anakin made the decision.
There were a lot of moments. Yeah, that undoubtedly. There were a lot of moments where Anakin could have really looked at what he was doing and saying, this isn't right.
Yeah.
Youngling, Mace Windu's hand,
Yeah, he made the decision. At the end of the day, he made the decision. We have now watched For In a Galaxy. This is how White hits so hard for me, For In a Galaxy. We've watched 7 seasons of The Clone Wars and the 1.5 prequel films where Obi-Wan and Anakin are best buds. We've seen ad nauseum how strong that bond was. So what happens when it breaks? And I think that's what this does so beautifully, is it shows what the strongest of bonds. Again, Obi-Wan, of course, referred to him, you are my brother, Anakin.
Yeah.
And now it's gone. And now it's all gone. And it is a breathtaking scene. What I also love about Mapuzo is those browns and grays of the background there. It's a very dry color palette. But Obi-Wan and Vader have, of course, their blue and red lightsabers, which are, they're very noticeable. So they stand out. So you're not paying attention about the setting. You're paying attention to these characters like you should be. And what they're going through. And I think that's a really great touch by Chow and the production designers to do that.
Yeah, I think speaking of the visuals and the cinematography, I think the duel is obviously, it's great. It's laden with emotion and meaning, but I do think that the cinematography kind of undercuts it somewhat. We talked a lot with Lauren last week about the volume and its pros and cons. And I'm not here to complain about the volume or saying the problem is because you notice that it is the volume, because I don't. But I couldn't help but feel this did feel a little bit, I don't know, cheap, strangely artificial. I'm not sure. This setting, it just didn't feel quite right. And the whole shaky cam thing, yes, it did make it, it did definitely add to the drama. But I also think that ultimately these things distracted and detracted from the moment. Vader literally dragging Obi-Wan through the fire. It's like such a crazy moment that I never thought we would get. And I do think that these things hold it back just a little bit. But obviously at the end of the day, the moment is the moment, and it's still got like a fever dream.
I will say I noticed the volume, I think, the most in this episode so far. Again, I'm notoriously bad at detecting it. I will disagree with you about the shaky cam. I do think that it is Obi-Wan's, like, it's very representative of Obi-Wan's fear. I understand if it might be a little too much. I personally find it too much, but that's just me. The other thing I love about this duel, I just want to say this, is this duel is not well choreographed. And I mean that as the biggest compliment. Because it fucking shouldn't be. For all we know, Vader hasn't dueled another lightsaber user in 5 years. Obi-Wan, it's been 10. These guys, even though they are extremely powerful, are not in prime shape. They're just not.
Yeah.
Vader more so than Obi-Wan, but Obi-Wan hasn't touched his lightsaber in almost a decade.
You're right, yeah. You're right.
And we will get our well-choreographed, intense, fucking insane duel at the end of part six. But this is not the time for that. This is the time for these two slugging it out, wielding those lightsabers like glorified fucking baseball bats. This is not about winning. This is about surviving.
It's effective.
Also, of course, the great line, "You should have killed me when you had the chance." And then I think we're both angling to talk about this scene because it's so fucking crazy. Drops the coals, lights it on fire, force chokes Obi-Wan, drags him on the ground. "Now you will suffer, Obi-Wan." Let me talk about the petty bitch that is Anakin Skywalker. This man, the first thing he does once he gets a victory over his former master is do the galaxy's most dramatic "how's it feel now" I've ever seen. That's what he does. He recreates Mustafar.
He definitely goes over the top for this one. He really does.
He recreates Mustafar to do the most overdramatic "how's it feel, taste of your own medicine" shit that I've ever seen. Anakin Skywalker is a fantastic character. He is also one of the galaxy's biggest drama kings.
Yeah, no. Unabashedly, yeah. Unabashedly.
And I love it so much. Like, this, that is something that, like, it's almost funny to me that Anakin, like, again, cares so goddamn much.
He's had a lot of time to think about it.
Yeah, he's had a lot of time, to, think
lot
about
time to think about it.
And he's clearly been mulling it over. It is, like, again, it's horrifying watching Obi-Wan get burned. But also, it's just, yeah. Like, you petty bitch. Like, you really doing this?
Yeah, I think we get one of the best shots in Star Wars ever. Just that low angle shot of Vader's helmet through
and the
flames,
fire reflecting, yeah.
Distorted by the heat waves, fire in his eyes, lit up only by the flames. That's a phenomenal shot. That's a phenomenal visual. That's the one that, of everything from this episode and from this show even, that's the one that just sticks in my head. If I had to just pick one still frame, one mental image, that's what sticks in my head because it's bone chilling.
It is fucking bone chilling. And then the last thing I want to get to in this episode, of course, is Reva finding the hidden path, which I also love. Again, so much great face acting in this series. And Moses Ingram's face as Reva realizes what was out there this entire time, like Obi-Wan, but this is a way more tragic sense because she could have used the path. She could have used them helping to escape from the Empire. But yeah. She's too far gone and she knows it. And it's, I don't want to say beautiful, but it's so interesting seeing how mad she gets when she realizes the different destiny that she could have had. And it's like, there were others saved from the Empire, but not her. Why the fuck did they get to be so lucky?
Yeah.
Why did they escape, but not her?
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah.
It's this heartbreaking look, and again, fulfills Reva's hurt mantra in this episode. And of course,
100%, yeah.
Reva captures Leia at the end, leading us well into part four. I'll throw it to you, Jacob. What do you think about this episode? Okay.
Gosh, I mean, overall, I would say this is maybe my favorite episode, although it's close with episode two, actually, so far. I like that it really focuses in on the meat and potatoes. The meat being Obi-Wan and Leia's journey, and the proverbial potatoes being Obi-Wan and Anakin's journey. These two relationships this is what it's all about. Not entirely sure about some of the trappings, some of the execution in this one. I think this is where I kind of see that discussion of the visuals of the show, finding some unfortunate limitations. But overall, it's fun, it's exciting. Something about the pacing, something about the way a lot of the episode is executed. I just feel like it comes out to be a little bit less than the sum of its parts if you sat down and told me what happened in the episode versus me watching it. But ultimately, it's still a darn good episode of Star Wars. It has some true Kodak moments, so I can't fault it for these things.
I feel like I'm sounding like a broken record in these episodes. I really fucking do. This is a top 10 episode of Star Wars television for me, and I do not regret saying that at all. I loved nearly everything in this episode. The second half, like once they get to the town, is just a masterclass in Star Wars storytelling for me. The way they handle Vader, the way they handle Obi-Wan's fear. Again, this is the Vader episode. And he dominates the story. You cannot stop thinking about him. It put a lot of the myth back into that character for me in a way that I hadn't felt in a long time. And again, I loved Rogue One and the Jedi games' usage of Vader. But there's just something about this episode and how it does it. Obi-Wan and Leia continue to be great. I can't praise Reva enough. Yeah, in my notes I call it a masterclass of an episode in dialogues, in themes, in political commentary, in lightsaber fighting, in just about everything. Only minor nitpick, and this is just me, because I wish we got to the village sooner, just because everything in the village is just pure gold to me. But I understand why we needed to do the things before we got there. Slasher movie Vader, like that horror villain Vader, is something that... This is the show that made Vader scary again. And
yeah.
I cannot praise it enough. It's always scary, but
this turns it up. This really turns it up.
This is, I'll amend that statement. This is the show that makes Vader a monster again.
Yeah.
And I cannot praise it enough for doing so. All right, I think if there's anything else, I think that's going to be it for this episode of Star Wars in the Galaxy. Thank you for listening to this episode. We will be back next week with our analysis of part 4 of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And we will, in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at In a Galaxy Pod. Follow us everywhere at In a Galaxy Pod. You can you can listen to us on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you're listening to podcasts. We'll be there. If you want to follow me, I have a link tree that I use, linktr.ee/_ochifan327 for all my links, including stuff I do for In a Galaxy, stuff I do outside of In a Galaxy. Epic Confrontations, I believe, will have 19 will have released by the time we put this episode out. So go watch Andy versus Brandon. It was a fun match. Get ready for the doubleheader later this month, the Jerry versus Jane in our second number one contender match. And the undercard, our adaptation of the Schmodown's Inner Geekdom Division with Travis Grossman and Kelly Knox. I'm so excited for both of them. Yeah, I think that's going to be it for this episode. But in the meantime, may the Force be with you. Always.